Welcome to another edition of Public Perspectives. This morning, a guest in the studio is Mr. Scott Fox. He is the Audrain County Assistant Prosecuting Attorney. Welcome to you this morning, sir.
Thank you, Matt. It's nice to be here.
Wonderful that, and really glad that you've decided to come in and do the program with us here. Is this your first time on Public Perspectives, or have you been a guest before?
No, I've just recently moved to Mexico, so this is my first time.
Great. Well, if you would, tell folks a little bit about yourself. Where did you move from?
I was working previously at the Attorney General's office in Jefferson City, and before that I worked in Boonville as an assistant prosecutor. In my life, I have lived in a variety of states. My parents were in the military, so as a kid, I grew up all over.
Outstanding. So did you work for Josh Hawley?
No, I worked for the previous Attorney General.
Okay, right on. Wonderful. So how long have you been with Audrain County Prosecuting Attorney's Office?
2 years now.
2 years. Okay. Where did you grow up and where did you go to school at?
Well, like I said, my parents were in the military, so I went to many different schools before I got into high school, and I went to high school in Kansas City. Then I attended the University of Missouri in Rolla first in engineering, and then went to the University of Missouri and graduated from there, and then got a law degree a little later in life.
Right on. Did you? What got you interested into law, if you would share that with us?
Well, I've always had an interest and a passion for the Constitution. I believe firmly in its principles, and I enjoy reading about it. And I was a computer programmer in my first career, and there's not a lot of call for legal arguments or, you know, reflections in computer programming. And computer programming can be, in my particular area, was a relatively lonely one, and I like interaction with people more.
Most certainly. So you've come to Audrain County, and how many people work in your office?
There's about a dozen of us. I'm in the, we have a child support division of the Child Support Enforcement Unit out of Jefferson City, actually based in Mexico, which is unique and unusual. Most counties don't have that. And we have three child support workers there. And then we have the main prosecutor's office and an investigator. So there's seven or eight people over there.
Certainly. And what are some of the responsibilities of the assistant prosecuting attorney here in Audrain County?
Well, by statute, the assistant prosecutor steps in for the prosecutor in anything the prosecutor deems fit. In my particular area, I'm also the juvenile attorney for the county. So I do work with the juvenile office. I represent the juvenile office. I also try cases for the prosecuting attorney's office, and I'm responsible for a lot of the filings in the child support division and supervision of those people. So I do a lot of things up at the courthouse.
I can imagine. I'm kind of curious as to how your work day is. What take us through just maybe a normal day that that you go through, if there's anything normal.
I don't think there's anything that's typical or normal. Anytime you're working regularly with the public, and particularly if you're working regularly with law enforcement, you might have a quiet day and think it's going to be a quiet day, and then a search warrant yields a shootout, and you know you're working until midnight. And there's no real way to know what you're getting up to every day.
So, whenever you first get a case, can you kind of walk us through that? How you attack that?
Yeah. So, prosecutors are civilian entities. We're not technically law enforcement, though we work closely with law enforcement. Our objective is to stand in the stead of the state of Missouri. So we represent the state of Missouri. And so that means that when it's time for law enforcement to say that they have probable cause to believe a crime is committed, we are the first people that they bring that material to take an interpretation on what the officer has done. If the officer is doing something that we don't believe is supported by the laws or the Constitution, we tell them, and then we direct them to what it would take in order for us to be involved with that case. Then if the officer has given us facts for probable cause, we file it. Then there's a criminal case. The judge takes a look at our filings and makes sure that we've done what we are supposed to do. Judges issue warrants, although we make recommendations. Then once the criminal case is started and a warrant's been issued, usually people find out. Now, an awful lot of cases, and people don't realize this, but most cases, we issue summons. We don't issue a warrant. We just ask you to come to court and answer the charges. And it could be something simple. It could be a trespass, or it could be a speeding ticket. All of those things are not warrant worthy. And so you're just expected to show up to court. Now, if you don't show up to court, then the judge will issue a warrant because you didn't show up to court. then we work with defendants and victims, if there's a victim in the case, and law enforcement in order to come up with a just resolution.
Absolutely. And so beforehand, do you work with people's defense attorneys, or does that kind of come whenever you get into court? Is there a negotiation that goes on? Or?
Well, defense attorneys are there to represent only the defendant. Everybody else in the entire system goes through the prosecutor. So a victim needs to look to the prosecutor to have their victim rights stood up for. The judicial system, because we are the people that file the cases and we are the people that that set the hearings and proceed with the hearings, it's our responsibility to bring witnesses in. So interacting with the community means that you're interacting largely with the prosecutor. Then with law enforcement, because law enforcement has been involved in the case, they're interacting with us too. So that on the defendant's side, the defense attorney only looks after the defendant's constitutional rights. On the prosecutor side, we look after everybody's. And that even sometimes includes defendants. It is our preference for everybody to have counsel, but sometimes people can't afford it, or because they have bonded out, the public defenders won't enter into their case even though they can't afford it. And in those kinds of cases, we have to be very careful to represent the defendant's interests even while we're doing the case. And that means that you have to be careful.
Absolutely. Well, I'm kind of interested, too, to find out how things work inside the courtroom whenever you're in there. Of course, we all watch the law shows on TV, Law and Order, and you know, all of the others. So, well, we're going to delve into that here in our second segment on Public Perspectives. Scott Fox, the Assistant Prosecuting Attorney for Audrain County, is here this morning on Public Perspectives, AM 1340 KXEO. And welcome to segment number two here on Public Perspectives, AM 1340 KXEO. Scott Fox, the Assistant Prosecuting Attorney for Audrain County, is joining us in the studio this morning. And we were talking a little bit about you, and I'm kind of wondering some of the cases that you have tried over the years, and we were talking a little bit about that off of the air, if you can share that with us.
There are a variety of, any criminal prosecutor will encounter cases, the full spectrum, from speeding cases and resisting arrest cases and burglary cases, all the way up to rape cases and murder cases. It is difficult to, as a prosecutor, be good in all areas. It's difficult to be a good prosecutor for evidence on a forensically oriented case, and then be very good with witnesses and getting witnesses to be able to talk on the stand. And one of the areas that I emphasized earlier in my career was child sex cases. So I worked a good number for the Attorney General and for Cooper County. I worked a good number of child sex cases. And one of the difficulties when you're getting a child ready to talk about something as invasive and difficult as the sexual acts that they've had happen to them is to get the child able to face their accuser. In the United States, it's a requirement that we have a confrontation clause where you can confront the witnesses against you. And that is one of the rights that the prosecutors stand up for. So we have to make sure that our witnesses are capable of doing that. It's very difficult to have a six-year-old girl take the stand and talk about those things right in front of the person that did them to her. So there are specific laws that allow you to erect a barrier, for instance, or a screen, or put the witness on the stand in a way so that the defendant still gets their cross-examination rights. And I specialize in those kind of cases of getting difficult witnesses to be able to testify. In several of my early cases, the victim had to testify by video. And so ultimately at trial, the child was not actually put on the stand. We played a video of the child being examined and then cross-examined by defense counsel, but she wasn't there in the courtroom. And those kinds of cases are very difficult for juries because the video happened, you know, months before, and they're to watch the credibility determinations they have to make from the child on the stand. And you have to explain those things to them. So being a good prosecutor means being able to take difficult cases and ultimately conduct the trial and give the defendant a fair trial and prevail if he's to be found guilty.
One high-profile case that you know, many people are aware of, not only in Mexico but statewide, was the Comerzon case that took place in St. Charles. You told me that this was one of your first officer fatality cases. Is that right?
That's correct. Yep. We don't see a lot of officer fatality cases, fortunately. But when you do see one, determining the level of defendant culpability in those things is always difficult. Officers do dangerous jobs. And to a certain extent, the public knows that and expects the officer to have been doing a dangerous job. And it's difficult to hold a defendant responsible for the criminal conduct that the defendant did when the officer is doing something that's dangerous. And in the Comerzon case, we had an officer that was attempting to stop a motorcyclist that was already going over 100 miles an hour. In that particular case, we conducted a trial the first time in St. Charles County, and we received a mistrial because the jurors could not all agree on the verdict. We took the case back and ultimately ended up, the jurors acquitted him of any criminal wrongdoing.
Your thoughts and feelings on that case, because I know that it was widely covered by a lot of media. Does that affect the way a trial goes whenever you have all of that media in one spot, wanting to know every detail as soon as you come out of the courtroom?
Well, you try to not let it affect you. Your goal is to give a fair trial every single time, regardless of whether there's cameras in the courtroom or not cameras in the courtroom. The defendant's rights don't change because there's more media inspection of the case. My behavior shouldn't change. I should be the upstanding prosecutor I'm supposed to be, regardless of whether somebody's watching me or somebody's not there. In Comerzon's case, the difficulty of the case was that there was no one single fact that would end up proving the defendant guilty. And it had to be, if a prosecution was going to be successful, it had to be a layer of facts. One small fact added to one more small fact, et cetera, and so on, ultimately that we believed would prove the defendant guilty. And some of those facts were not insignificant, but there were two different ways of looking at each of those. And ultimately, I think the jury took a look at the entire set of facts and just believed they couldn't find beyond a reasonable doubt. That doesn't necessarily mean that another jury might not be able to find that, or that a civil jury might not be able to find by a preponderance of the evidence. So recently in the news, everybody knows about the O.J. Simpson case. Ultimately, he was found to be not guilty beyond a reasonable doubt, but culpable in a wrongful death case by a preponderance of the evidence. And so the legal standard really does make a difference on the set of facts that the jury's looking at.
And we'll move right along because we have had so much coverage on the Comerzon case, and I'm sure that people are maybe tired of hearing about it by now. So, one other thing I really wanted to ask you too, and we kind of alluded to it before we went to break. We all watch the Law and Order programs and see the outbreaks in the courtroom from suspects or witnesses. Does that happen in real life court too?
It doesn't happen very often. The defendant very seldom ever takes the stand and then admits upon a grueling cross-examination that they actually did it. That actually never really happens. What defendants typically do is they take the stand and they put the best light on all the facts that they possibly can. And ultimately the jury ends up saying, yes, they believed the defendant, or no, they didn't. The outbreaks you see more often are not from defendants, who are carefully coached by defense counsel to keep their actions within the view of the judge and the jury to be very reasonable actions so that they don't look like they're a criminal. The outbreaks come from witnesses, usually. That's what we see most often.
I understand. Have you seen, personally, any outbreaks that come to your mind that you could share with us here today that, where you thought, well, man, we're in some danger here, and just tell us about that if you would.
Sure. So I worked a case in which a four-month-old child was being sit by a babysitter that was from within the church, and the child died while in the babysitter's care. And the ultimate verdict in that case, because it ended up being a judge-sentenced case, was that the defendant were to receive probation. And at the point at which the mother heard that the defendant was receiving probation and was not spending any time in jail for the death of her son, she couldn't handle it. She burst out with cries. She ran toward the defendant, and my victim advocate actually had to physically restrain her before the bailiffs did, and get her moved out of the courtroom. And then we had to talk to her about, legal options and things like that. As prosecutors, we're supposed to protect the entire system, but we have a real penchant for wanting to protect victims because nobody else will.
Did we do a pretty good job here in Audrain County of protecting the courthouse? Do you believe?
The courthouse in Audrain County has security as you go into court every day. It has a large number of bailiffs. I've been in courtrooms that have fewer people keeping track of those sorts of things. We have a very seasoned court staff. Judge Hamlet has been here for a good number of years. Mr. Schellerbarger, my boss, has been here for a decade. So we all know our roles, and the courthouse up here runs very well.
Outstanding. I think what we'll do, let's take our second break. We'll come back and maybe talk to you a little bit about what are some major challenges facing law today, and talk to you a little bit more in our final segment on Public Perspectives, AM 1340 KXEO. And thanks for listening to Public Perspectives this morning. It's a third and final segment with Scott Fox, Audrain County Assistant Prosecuting Attorney. And while I have you here, one question that I wanted to ask you was, what are some of the biggest challenges facing the judicial system today, in your opinion?
Well, the biggest challenge we have is just the sheer number of criminal cases that we're moving through the system. So the laws of the state of Missouri make the possession of drugs a significant felony, not a minor incident at all. Any small amount of methamphetamine can result in a decade in prison under the right circumstances. And so we see a lot of criminal litigation based upon drug use, drug possession, selling of drugs, and Mexico has a drug problem, and we're doing our best in order to assist law enforcement in solving the drug problem and moving those cases through the system. And it's just too many. It's too many cases because there's that much drug use out there.
And we have what is called a drug court here in Mexico, as I understand it. Do you think that works out pretty well, or do you see a lot of the same offenders coming back?
Well, my personal opinion and my professional opinion actually diverge on this. Mm-hmm. So in my personal opinion, law enforcement cannot be the sole solution to the drug problem in America. We have to have more treatment. We have to have more involvement by medical professionals, mental health professionals. An awful lot of people self-medicate, and that's the reason they're taking whichever drugs they're on. And underlying, there's really a mental health problem going on. Some people turn to drugs during down times in their lives, and then they can't break the addiction. Making that a criminal affair ends up making the entire situation worse. It actually puts them in a worse part of life. It gives them felonies. It makes it difficult for them to have jobs. So at the prosecuting attorney's office, we take all of that into consideration. And the drug court's an important diversion program for trying to get people to break the cycle, particularly if it's early on, and enhance their lives through a less criminal-oriented aspect. Now, at the point at which you've had many multiple attempts at a drug court or drug treatment, and you don't seem amenable to being able to change your ways that way, and particularly, as is the case with most people, drugs are very difficult to come by because they are illegal. They're very expensive for an awful lot of people, and so they end up selling some of them in order to be able to promote the habit, and that is the difficulty because the laws regarding distribution and sale are significant. And so you tend, if you're not just a user, but a person who actually distributes it or sells it, you tend to end up in prison. And then when you're done, you don't have a lot of job prospects because you just got done going through prison. So we, as much as possible, try to break the cycle early with the drug court program, the diversion programs we have, other drug treatments that are available through the Department of Corrections, and in private entities. A lot of times we use private diversion, where we'll send somebody to a private drug treatment center in the hopes that they can break the cycle of addiction and get their lives back on track.
I'm curious as to your personal opinion on, is the judicial system fair for, residents in the state, residents maybe of Audrain County?
A judicial system is only as fair as the human beings that are doing it. And you have to have people with discretion that are careful about what they do, that don't give up on people, that care about the long-term effects on their life, even of the defendant, from the prosecuting perspective. Now, defense attorneys are supposed to be there to represent all of the defendant's interests, and we want people to have defense counsel. But as much as possible, we work with defense counsel in order to craft the correct and just resolution for their cases. The goal of the prosecutor is not just to put people in prison. The goal of the prosecutor is to make all of our lives better and safer. And if there's a way we can break a cycle of addiction early on, then that's what we want to do.
What's a typical hours that you work in a week? Is it just crazy to think about? Do you even keep track of it anymore?
Well, I don't know. I don't carefully keep track of it. If it's a trial week, I will work every waking moment. In the case of major cases that are 5 or 6 day trials, I have one of those about every other month or every 3 months. On those weeks, I work every moment of the weekends, every moment of the evenings during trial. When it's not a trial week, when we're just doing hearings, those hearings can be pretty involved. A preliminary hearing with a domestic violence victim can take many hours of preparation. The presentation of evidence to a judge has to be careful because there are specific rules of evidence by how we present things. So even though you may know that an event happened, it may be very difficult for you to prove it given the rules of evidence. So that can take a lot of hours. I also have very strong assistants. We usually have a law student assistant that gives us a hand with some things from Mizzou Law because they're so close. We have an investigator that works hard to serve subpoenas and find out where witnesses are. We have a victim advocate that works hard in order to make sure our victims know what's going on and they're ready to participate in the system. So all of our staff, you know, really put in a lot of hours as well. So it's not just the prosecutors that are doing this.
How do you break up the monotony and keep from, you know, going insane, I guess, for lack of a better phrase?
Well, you know, we are, it's just two of us. It's just Jacob and I in the office at the moment for prosecutors. And we alternate on calls. So every other weekend we're on call. And, you know, we have evening hours. It's not unusual for me to get a call at 2 o'clock in the morning in order to be able to do a search warrant for a blood draw because we had a drunk driver on the road. So those things just are part of the course and price of doing business as a prosecutor.
Understand. And do they? Do you guys get called to the scene sometimes as it has just happened?
Sometimes, although not very often. We rely upon law enforcement to do their job. We sometimes go to the scene in order to be able to take an overview for what kind of criminal liability might be coming. It's very important for prosecutors to not second guess law enforcement's investigative techniques because we're not investigators. Ultimately, we're lawyers and we've been trained to know the evidence and the law, but to be an investigator takes a very specialized skill set and we try not to second guess them.
What's the most rewarding thing about your job?
Oh, there's no doubt. It's working with victims and making sure that to the best extent that we can, that they're made whole. There's when you've lost a loved one or you've been sexually molested by your father or you've your car's been totaled and you don't have transportation anymore, being able to work with a victim to try to make their life a little more right is the most rewarding part of the job because nobody else is ever going to stand up for them. We have a domestic violence shelter that does an excellent job here, and they will assist with services. And our victim advocate does an excellent job of keeping the victim informed about what kind of services are available. But ultimately, the criminal disposition for a prosecutor that is victim-centric is why I'm here. That's why I have my job.
Would you think about running for political office? Josh Hawley may be leaving Missouri as Missouri Attorney General if he's elected to the Senate. Would you think about running for an office like that?
I would not think about running for a statewide office. I don't enjoy politics as far as the actual personal application of them. I have a tendency to speak my mind too much, and that doesn't usually do well. I don't pander very well. It has never come up that I've put my name on a ballot yet. It may happen.
We'll leave it with that, and hopefully you'll come back and do the show with us one more time in the future, or a couple of more times. It's been a pleasure to talk to you this morning.
Thank you, Matt.
Well, thank you. This has been another edition of Public Perspectives with Scott Fox, the Audrain County Assistant Prosecuting Attorney. It's on AM 1340 KXEO.